I'll Run to Your Side. Written by Fnelt, read by CC Rambles. This is a Mo Dao Zuxir fanfic containing the pairing of Lan Wenxi Wei Wuxian and is rated G. When Wei Ying gets back to the Jingxi after spending his day on the farm, Lan Zhan isn't there. That's not necessarily unusual. Sometimes sect duties and training take Lan Zhan's time, and so Wei Ying hums to himself as he unloads his little parcel of salad greens. It's a new song he's learned, his payment for teaching the children to read and write. Everyone in the village is scrupulous about making sure Wei Ying is paid for any services he gives. Wei Ying doesn't need or want the money, but the music has value for him. He's learned how to act like a merchant, how much time for how many songs, how many pieces of paper in exchange for letting him muck around in the dirt. The farmers hadn't known what to make of him at first, this cultivation partner of Han Guanzhen's, who insisted on coming down to the farm to help. They worked the farms that were dedicated to feeding the cloud rhesuses and got protection from Gu Su Lan as well as payment, but that just meant they recognized that the silk robes and headband meant something bad. When someone only comes to treat the sick or demand food, or, as has happened in living memory, races in like rats in front of a fire to tell everyone to escape the destruction, then it's reasonable to tense and pause when someone unexpected arrives. They might have turned him away, very politely, if Wei Wuxian, in his dark robes and unadorned forehead, hadn't been so unusual. He did not match the profile of the usual harbinger of tragedy. He can't imagine how they would have reacted if he'd brought Lan Zhan with him. Even so, they did not want to owe a favour to one such as he. What would it look like for a cultivator to call in their due, those strangers who lived in the clouds and flew above their heads? But all he wanted to do was work with the plants, and eventually he convinced them of that. Once that suspicion had waned, they were happy enough to let him splash around in the dirt. He calls it farming, they persist in calling it gardening, and he has to admit their dismissive attitude is pretty justified. He doesn't have the endurance for it to amount to anything real. He pulls at weeds or hoes the ground until he gets bored, and then he wanders off to chase the children or swing them up into the air. He can't do that for as long as he'd like either, as this body isn't strong enough for it. Yet. He will train this body up and develop its golden core until he can hold a small child up for as long as they want. There's no better reason to work hard. So really, he owes them. But he still accepts his payment in working songs and mother songs and children's rhymes, taught to him with the promise he won't share them with any of the other adults. This is an easy promise to keep, because if anyone in the cloud recesses sees him hopping around oddly while humming, they tend to walk in wide circles around him like he's a goose in mating season. It's almost insulting. Those geese are vicious, okay? Wei Wuxian doesn't think he's nearly on their level. Today he's learned a working song, though, a rhythm-counting song to help a weaver keep track of their pattern, the over-under of shuttle working between threads. He thinks this type of song would be useful for teaching young cultivators to draw arrays. Arrays are difficult to memorize. The pattern of lines and the way they loop back on each other is hard to do. Students bring reference texts with them on night hunts for a long time, and copying under pressure, in the dark, is prone to errors. Errors which can be catastrophic. The weaving patterns are at least as complex as the most complicated array, and the songs take a mere few repetitions to learn. He wants to ask Lan Zhan's opinion, see if he agrees. He hums this weaving song while he tidies the things he brought back. He tucks the vegetable basket aside to take to the kitchens, puts away the samples of children's writing. That's when he sees a flash of white. Wei Ying picks up Lan Zhan's lan ribbon, carefully coiled on top of the box of the village children's writing, and knows that Lan Zhan has gone out. Gone out is a totally different manifestation than Lan Zhan not being there. It's the term the other Lan disciples use when they gather in clumps to whisper. Han Guanten has gone out, they hiss, with undue emphasis on the words. A special turn of phrase that indicates that Lan Zhan is away for more than the usual trip down to Tai Yi to replenish their stash of Emperor's smile. Tracking down Lan Zhan is easy. He finds the paper with the place name or the drawing of a fork in a river, and then he just lets himself gravitate. Lan Zhan is never hiding, even though Wei Ying has heard whispers from others. He just goes. This time it's specific, a bridge name written in his clear, light script, the paper weighed down by his Lan sect ribbon. Wei Ying picks up the ribbon carefully and wraps it around his own wrist. When Wei Ying gets there, the sun has set. The bridge is crowded, many people pushing for a space, but despite the sea of people, it's easy to see Lan Zhan. It's always easy to see him. Even in his nondescript brown clothes, he stands against the backdrop of the dark sky like a full moon. And this is why Wei Ying loves this game. It's a chance every time to see Lan Zhan for the first time, to turn to him, rush to him, be held up by him. The way he never did in his first life, the way he didn't do when he was summoned into this body. But he can do it now, can look at Lan Zhan and call to him. That action reverberates backwards through everything that has ever been between them. It lets him take the first steps into their future. Lan Zhan! He calls out, and Lan Zhan turns and smiles at him. Wei Ying floats up through the crowd to get to Lan Zhan's side. As soon as he gets close enough, Lan Zhan hooks an arm around his waist and pulls him in. Even without the robes, the headband, the kutin, all the trappings that make Lan Zhan Han Guanten, there is something about him that sets him apart. How does Lan Zhan look so special? Wei Ying wonders. One night, Wei Ying had lain in bed next to Lan Zhan, trying to puzzle it out. He tapped at Lan Zhan's eyebrow, index finger above his nose, pinky down by his temple, the curve of Lan Zhan's brow under the pads of his fingers. It would say much if removing an article of clothing made me other than who I am, Lan Zhan had observed. Hmm, Wei Ying had said, and drummed his fingers against Lan Zhan's face. Lan Zhan reached up to grab Wei Ying's hand and bring his fingers to Lan Zhan's mouth. He bit the tips carefully. Without letting go of Wei Ying's hand, he pulled back enough to say, I am always myself, just as you are always Wei Ying, regardless of what you look like. Wei Ying's thoughts spun away from him like butterflies when a rabbit came too close to their patch of clover. Wei Ying was rarely self-conscious of his new body, but rarely did not mean never. Lan Zhan, that's hardly... I was asking a valid... and gave up entirely when Lan Zhan kissed his palm. So he never got an answer as to why Wei Ying can always see Lan Zhan so clearly, yet others cannot. And they can't. Wei Ying has seen it. Tonight, on this bridge, with Lan Zhan glowing like starlight, Wei Ying still doesn't have one. Lan Zhan's trick with his robes and ribbons works completely on disciples of the major sects, several of whom Wei Ying had seen walk by Lan Zhan without even an acknowledgement. It works less well on everyday people. His bearing, his gaze, the smoothness of the skin of his face, all of these things marked him as moneyed. But there was still a difference between Han Guanten and a nondescript rich person. There's a reason Wei Ying hasn't brought his husband where he teaches the children. Those cosmetic markers were enough for Lan Zhan's purposes. Wei Ying had understood immediately, or thought he'd understood it. Lan Zhan goes where the chaos is. No one wants to show chaos to such an esteemed gentleman, so things tend to get tucked to the side, whitewashed, reed mats thrown over them, everything tidy and hidden. But Lan Zhan knows better than anyone that tidy doesn't mean clean, doesn't mean that there isn't a problem underneath. The people who would still approach Lan Zhan, knowing who he is? Wei Ying shudders, constantly amazed by his husband's ability to face such provocations with a steady demeanor. So Wei Ying understands. He also understands that sometimes the need to move overwhelms his husband. Lan Shan is a man with a depth in him that runs to the center of the earth. He can't stay among the clouds. Lan Shan gets restless, an invisible tension in him that builds tightness in the corners of his eyes until Lan Shan goes somewhere. Wei Ying doesn't know what causes pressure to build up in his husband, but he can see it happening, and is glad that Lan Shan has something that brings him peace. Tonight he settled on the ground of this bridge. Wei Ying hums and leans against Lan Shan's chest. Lan Shan's arms tighten around him. Wei Ying opens his mouth to ask why they're here when there's a pop and a burst of color in the sky. Wei Ying gasps and turns in Lan Shan's arms. Fireworks! He looks up at Lan Shan. I didn't know you liked them. Lan Shan says, eyes fixed on the sky. It's the first time in a long time that Wei Ying has looked at Lan Shan, and Lan Shan hasn't looked back. But held here in the cage of Lan Shan's arms, he finds he doesn't mind it. He turns his head and looks up, too. The next time Lan Shan goes out, Wei Ying has just come back from traipsing through the woods with Tin Ling under the excuse of training. Ah, Wei Ying had argued that morning. Every cultivator needs to be able to orient in case their spiritual energy is low or they're transported to an unfamiliar place. Tin Ling had peered at him suspiciously, but he'd been looking for an excuse to leave the overly perfumed halls too, so he'd shrugged and shouldered his bow and they'd set off together. Neither Wei Ying nor Lan Shan like visiting Tin Lin Tai, but Wei Ying loves to see Tin Ling, and Lan Shan occasionally needs to appear with Lan delegations as a sign of respect, so they're there more times than they'd like. It's fine. Or maybe it's not. If Lan Shan is feeling the need to go, to be elsewhere, maybe it's less fine than Wei Ying assumed. The tricky part about having a husband is good, kind, generous, sexually demanding, The tricky part about loving Lan Shan is that he says a lot with very little. Lan Shan's words are the rustle of leaves on a tree whose roots are about to upend a house. Wei Ying listens, but he can't always see the changes that are occurring beneath the ground. It is hard to predict when Lan Shan will go out or what he will do. Wei Ying secretly suspects that Lan Shan is conducting a geographic survey to find the best trees to sleep under. It explains why he has to go incognito. Lan Shan must go in disguise to assess these trees so that they do not become overrun with others seeking a shady spot. These locations are discovered just for him and for Wei Ying. Wei Ying will often find him sitting, so relaxed it might be considered a lounge, until Wei Ying bounds up and Lan Shan opens his arms. Then they sink to the ground and are lost to the world. There is not a rhythm to his departures. Still, Wei Ying is surprised to see Lan Shan has left. His ribbon is left behind as incontrovertible proof. Wei Ying picks it up, wraps it around his wrist securely, and sets off after his husband. It's with a bit of a frown that Wei Ying heads out, following the trail that Lan Shan left for him. There's no particular clue this time, which is odd. No sign of Lan Shan at all, but Wei Ying still knows his husband, still knows how to track him. He doesn't have to travel long, only to the next village over. Wei Ying's frown deepens when he sees a crowd in the main street. There is a parade going on, one with paper figures suspended on poles and large kites being flown by several people. It's designed to be seen from a ways off, for everyone to know what's going on. Wei Ying is focused on finding Lan Shan, but he can't avoid the creeping realization of what he's looking at. Some of the puppets are black, with terrifying red faces, wide-open mouths, and sharp teeth. The others are more human figures, dressed in yellow. The black puppets swoop and charge at the yellow ones, and the yellow ones fall back. It's like a wave that only moves in one direction, black pushing, yellow receding. Then the puppets dip down below the heads of the crowd to pop back up. It's a never-ending circle, the attack and retreat, as the parade slowly moves down the center of the street. Wei Ying grabs the arm of a spectator. Too hard, and Wei Ying releases immediately in the face of the stranger's glare, the pointed way they rub their arm afterwards. "What is this?" Wei Ying asks, and hears his voice from very far away. To his surprise, the man grins, gaps revealed at the front. Wei Ying thinks the man is lucky to have his canine teeth so he can still eat meat, can still tear into Wei Ying with his words. "Do you know, this is a solemn commemoration of the Yiling Patriarch's massacre at Nightless City." Wei Ying staggers back on numb feet. He'd forgotten, no, he'd never known. His time since there at the end had been poor, had been focused on the day-to-day realities of survival. His life was marked not by the shared calendar, but by personal events. The day Shechia got married, when Granny got better from her cold, when the next batch of fruit wine was acceptably fermented according to Uncle Four's standards. Tin Ling's 100 days. But Tin Ling's 100 days only counted the first time. He didn't stop Wei Ying when Wei Ying came to Tin Ling Tai with a hand outstretched, demanding presents, the way he'd done when Wei Ying came for his actual birthday. He can't stagger far because the crowd has swelled behind him. Instead, he's bouncing, jostled between people. He is a twig in a rapid, submerging as the water around him grows wilder, pushed up to the air as the currents demand its due. If there's one thing Wei Ying knows about rapids, it's that they all end the same way. The people he bumps into mutter, look at him sideways before sending their attention back to the display, Yiling Patriarch and tin cultivators locked in a never-ending struggle. He waits for the drop. A hand grabs his wrist and he flinches, violently, shoulder jarring in its socket, a vibration that goes up to his eyes. But the follow-up yell never comes. No one shouts that it's him, the Yiling Patriarch. No one drags him into the center of the parade to swarm around him and rip him apart. The hand tightens on his wrist and Wei Ying gasps. The air burns. He's been under too long. He can't resist when he gets pulled. It's confusing. He stumbles a step and he's pressed against coarse fabric. But the smell... "Lanzhan?" Wei Ying asks. "I'm here," Lanzhan says. "I'm here, with you." Wei Ying opens his eyes. Lanzhan has him in his arms, pressed close together. Lanzhan is looking down at him, eyes cloudy with concern. Wei Ying attempts a smile, but it shimmers at the edges and dissolves. Before Wei Ying can understand what's happening, Lanzhan whisks him away. He's not sure his feet are even on the ground anymore, not sure if he's touching the world at all, until Lanzhan sets him down in the back room of a tea house. The table is plain, stained and refinished and pockmarked with age and use, and Wei Ying stares at it until Lanzhan nudges a bowl of tea under his nose. "Drink," Lanzhan says, and Wei Ying continues to stare at the liquid steaming gently in front of him. Wei Ying can see a single leaf in the liquid, floating gently towards the bottom of the bowl. "Why are you here?" Lanzhan doesn't answer for a long moment. Then he says, "You weren't meant to follow." Wei Ying laughs bitterly. Lanzhan is many things, but he is never cruel, never to Wei Ying. "I always follow you, you know that." Sometimes it takes him a while, sometimes the path has unexpected switchbacks. But Wei Ying gets there in the end. He sips the tea. He isn't expecting much, not in an establishment like this, and it meets his expectations. The tea is sharp, curling at the edges of his tongue, but it's warm and his fingers are expectedly cold. He cradles the bowl with both hands. Perhaps Wei Ying should have realized that Lanzhan had disappeared for his own purposes. There hadn't been a clue, after all. but he'd been used to it. And some part of him is glad he came, that he saw, to know that his legacy continues, that he can never be forgiven. He lets the warmth of the bowl leach into his hands, sips the tea. It does not improve as it chills. They do this every year. He aims for nonchalance, like the question doesn't matter, like he doesn't already know the answer. Those puppets weren't new. The varnish on some of them was cracked, the fabric sun-bleached. He risks a glance at Lanzhan, whose lips are still pressed tightly together. Wei Ying, he says. Wei Ying sighs. I'm all right, Lanzhan. Lanzhan tips his chin forward. Wei Ying corrects himself. I will be all right. He sips the tea. I knew, after all, what the world thinks of me, who I am to them. The acrid taste lingers. It is a very low-quality blend. No, Lanzhan says. One word, like Wei Ying asked a simple question. Wei Ying raises an eyebrow. You do not know. May I tell you a story? Wei Ying gestures at his seat on the threadbare cushion, the pot of tea between them. I've got nothing but time. Wei Ying settles in to listen. Lanzhan's hand grips the table, knuckles tight on the wood. It's okay, Wei Ying says. Start where you can. Lanzhan smiles at Wei Ying with sad eyes, and Wei Ying looks back at him. Wei Ying could spend evenings doing nothing else. When I was in seclusion, Lanzhan begins, the gentlest euphemism. Wei Ying saw his scars, asked Lanzhan to tell him how long they took to heal. Lanzhan told him how the lines of fire on his back could not melt the chill in his heart, lines of frost that bit back. There was a revolt, here and in other places. Wei Ying puts the bowl down, empty. This is not where he was expecting the story to go. Lanzhan leans forward to refill it for him. This is the heart of the Tin Lands, close to Tin Lin Tai, close enough to have Tin disciples pass through it regularly. Wei Ying must look surprised, because Lanzhan nods once and explains. The rapid expansion of the Tin Domain put pressure on their food stores. Ah. Wei Ying thinks. Pressure means demands on farmers to provide more of their harvest, on families to send surplus children to work on projects, all very unpopular activities. Even if the war hadn't touched these lands in the same way it had ravaged Tinhua, the dissatisfaction could be significant. Clearly the revolt was unsuccessful. The word curdles in Wei Ying's mouth. He read sect histories with lines like that, conflicts and uprisings and revolts and wars summarized in a few lines. The small, neat language that obfuscated the reality of the thing. He'd trained to fight his entire life, learned the 17 war strategies, drilled the disciples in how to defend Lotus Pier from an attack. And none of that had prepared him for the reality of war. The Sunshot campaign had been cold and hungry and grimy. The hunger had numbed the fear, had made it easy to sleep and hard to wake up. In terms of experiences, it had been far more similar to his time living on the streets than any glorious campaign he'd dissected from silk-bound texts. So, an unsuccessful uprising could hide any number of hollow eyes and empty houses. Yes, Lanzhan agreed, flicking his eyes to the left. Wei Ying wonders if he sees the shadows of dead Wun farmers in the corners of this conversation, the way Wei Ying does. Wei Ying swallows. What does that have to do with... He trails off. All of this is tragic in the way that everyday life is a tragedy, but Wei Ying doesn't see how this is connected to the macabre parade. This area has never fully recovered. I do what I can, Lanzhan says, and Wei Ying wonders what that means, wonders what corners he could lift to see the years of Lanzhan's care underneath. The Tin presence is heavy and dissension is discouraged. There is a hardness to Lan Shan's features sometimes that wasn't there before Wei Ying died, that hadn't been there even before the war. Wei Ying feels like he now knows one more piece of sandpaper that wore Lan Shan's softness away. No one complains outright about the heavy-handedness of their overseers. No one can. At the same time, no one can complain if this town is zealous in pillorying the actions of the Yiling patriarch. I don't, Wei Ying starts, but visions of the parade he witnessed dance in his head. Separated from the shock of them, it occurs to him how odd it is that this particular parade commemorates a defeat for the cultivation world. That it is perhaps unusual that all of the vanquished puppets are tin. They're not attacking you, he realizes. They're attacking them. Lan Zhan tracks the play of thoughts on Wei Ying's face and nods with grim satisfaction. I attend every year, he admits. Wei Ying reaches out a hand to grip Lan Zhan's. That simple touch settles his heartbeat more than the quiet space and cup of tea combined. And this, Wei Ying tries out. This helps, coming here? For Wei Ying, it seems like a harsh reminder, but Lan Zhan has a reason for all things. There is nowhere else, Lan Zhan says, and his voice breaks off sharply. Nowhere I can be so. He trails off uncharacteristically. So critical, Wei Ying suggests. So angry, Lan Zhan corrects. His gaze is naked now, hardness cleaved in two. Even now. It is not every day, now that I have you whole and alive and with me. I sit among cultivators as they cover their petty grasping in fine cloth, and then I come here. Wei Ying blinks at him, quietly shocked. Lan Zhan has been stern, been set, been stubborn, but angry? With Wei Ying, he is never any of those things. Since Wei Ying's return to life, he has been unfailingly joyful. It leaks out of him, imbuing every touch, every action, a gentle glow that Wei Ying can see now that he knows how to look for it. His gaze beseeches Wei Ying, who can only squeeze his hand in response. I know I should not be, Lan Shan says. Not when you aren't. He looks away. You do not waste any of your time on resentment, and yet I, who was not even wronged, cannot grant any forgiveness. I cannot bring myself to. Wei Ying feels like he's being stabbed tenderly from the inside, as his heart beats harder to try and hold all of the love he feels for his husband. You were wronged, Wei Ying says, quietly. Lan Zhan looks at Wei Ying. When I was hurt, you were hurt. When I was dead, you were grieving. It feels strange to say the word aloud, to say it so unadorned, but it is true. Wei Ying had been dead, and Lan Zhan had been left here. Lan Zhan, I would never begrudge you anything. I'm often petty, but I am not so small. Wei Ying presses the fingers of his free hand to Lan Zhan's lips before he can argue. And you were wronged. I wronged you when I allowed myself to die, Wei Ying thinks. When Wei Ying destroyed the Stygian tiger seal, he hadn't been thinking about anything other than destruction. It's the world, his. There was no difference to him. It had mattered to Lan Zhan. You can be angry. You can be angry with me if you want, Wei Ying says. Lan Zhan lifts his chin. You would come with me. That's not what Wei Ying meant, but... Yes. Lan Zhan searches his face, and Wei Ying grows slightly impatient. Ah, Lan Zhan, didn't I say you could do anything with me? Did you think I only meant the easy things? He wants to stomp his foot, but he's sitting, and his legs still feel a little shaky. Lan Zhan looks at him, shadows in the corners of his eyes, and Wei Ying takes a breath, holds it, takes another. You should know by now that with me you're always allowed. Wei Ying shuffles a little, getting closer to Lan Zhan. Whatever it is, whatever you're feeling, you're allowed it. Please, let me have it. Lan Shan's arms come up and pull him in. Wei Ying surrenders himself and his grip becomes hard, bordering on crushing. Wei Ying can feel him breathing, harsh and unsteady, feel how strong his heart is beating.
They killed you,
Lan Shan says, and the darkness in his voice is real. Yes, Wei Ying agrees, and sets aside a future conversation about Wei Ying's own role in that. That is for later. Now is for this moment, this feeling. They hold each other for a long moment. When they break apart, Lan Zhan's eyes dart to Wei Ying's wrist, where he has wrapped Lan Zhan's ribbon. Do you want it back? Wei Ying asks, preparing to undo the knot. Lan Zhan's eyes dart to the side, and Wei Ying lets his hand fall, lets it rest on Lan Zhan's thigh. Wei Ying thinks about all of the things this ribbon represents. The adherence to a set of rules that govern what it means to be self-regulated. He thinks about the way Lan Zhan carefully never takes it with him when he goes, the way he feels like he is not allowed to be angry or express it. He thinks all of this, and only says, mild. I'm keeping this until you're ready to take it back. Wei Ying will keep it safe, will hold it for as long as is needed. Lan Zhan smiles at him, and Wei Ying pulls him back in close. Thinks he'll hold on to this, too. The end.